Welcome to the Parentpreneur Accelerator Podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan. Hi there, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm interviewing Laura Cross, who runs a children's education business, Inventors and Makers. Laura originally trained as a lawyer before leaving the corporate life to retrain as a primary school teacher. And after teaching in London for a few years, Laura relocated to San Francisco for her husband's work. Laura spent 3 years in California working for an education technology startup, which she says is the best job of her life. And after returning to the UK with her first child in 2017, she briefly went back to teaching in a school before launching her own children's education business, Inventors and Makers, last year. So in this episode, we're going to talk about the importance of creating a great team culture for the modern workplace. We'll discuss what Laura learned from her time in San Francisco, and particularly what influenced her in starting Inventors and Makers. And we'll also explore Laura's advice to other parentpreneurs about developing the skills that they need, but particularly amongst their teams and in their children too. So Laura, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, really, really excited to be here.
Fantastic. Well, let's start with Inventors and Makers. Tell us more about the business, because I understand their classes and workshops for children. What have you created there and why?
Yeah, so I think we'll sort of speak a bit later about my time in San Francisco, but essentially they are very much influenced by the things that I've learned from working in a startup and working within San Francisco. So Inventors and Makers, we run holiday classes, after school classes for children that are home educated, and actually classes as well for toddlers and preschoolers. What's really different about what we do is that we focus on 21st century skills, so things like problem solving, creativity, collaboration, and sometimes that's taught through app building or video game design, or sometimes it's through building machines or inventing and prototyping. But essentially, we want to encourage the next generation of entrepreneurs, because as you and I both know, entrepreneurship is about building a business around a problem. And I think that the more practiced that children are, and that even adults are, at identifying problems and solving them, the better that we'll all be. And wouldn't it be a better world if more people had the competence and skills to start a business to solve the problems they saw, rather than standing around complaining about them? Yeah, so that's kind of the mission behind Inventors and Makers.
Definitely, love that. And so in terms of the kind of activities, perhaps could you give us an example of how those run, and particularly some of the, some of the skills that you've seen develop, perhaps specific classes?
Yeah, so I'll use an example of video game design, because it's probably our most popular workshop. We're running one in February half term, so I'm sort of in the middle of planning it all at the moment. So they're always 1 or 2 day workshops, because I'm more about encouraging a breadth of disciplines and skills for children, rather than spending like a whole week doing something. When they just spend 1 or 2 days on video game design, and then the next day would be on a different skill. So within the video game design 1 or 2 day workshop, I make sure that children aren't spending the whole time designing video games, which sounds a little bit odd, but actually video game designers bring a whole host of other skills to the table that children need to develop. And a lot of that can be developed off screens. So for example, we might start a part of a day by talking about, well, okay, what is a game? Like, games have to have rules. So then we play a game with no rules, realize you actually need rules to play this. Okay, we develop our own rules, and well, okay, you need an objective, and tightening up those rules, tightening up the objective. And once they've realized all those things, they can build those skills within a real game. So they take a random sample of selection of resources. Maybe they have like a dice, a piece of paper, and a spinner, right? Make a game. And they have to use those to build their own game. And then obviously there's a lot of time spent building different kinds of video games as well. But it's all about building the skills, those 21st century skills, not about just learning to code or learning to build a game, but developing all the skills that are really important behind those technology skills.
Fantastic. I love that. I think I can definitely see how that's a really just an engaging program, you know, as a parent of two kids, like the idea of my kids doing that is just very, very exciting. And B, you know, it sort of feels like I can see how the breadth of those skills could be developed. Have you sort of had any resistance from any parents around it, or has it been universally accepted? Because I know that particularly in the area of anything, you know, as soon as you start mentioning screens, some people can get very uncomfortable about that or nervous about the it's going to kids doing that. What's the reception been like?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say the reception in full, because I only really meet the parents mm-hmm. that have decided to come to the workshops and classes. I think I totally get that a lot of parents are very reluctant around screen time. So one thing that I try to really explain, and as I just explained to you, is that we don't just spend all our time on screens.
Absolutely.
And I actually find that they, even in the video game design workshops, they spend 45 minutes building a game, and they're losing focus on it. You just cannot do something like staring at a screen for a particularly long period of time for children. They don't have the focus on that one activity. So mixing it up is really important. So there's that element to it. But I think that we need to, as a parent myself, I need to appreciate this, because I can feel that reluctance to, you know, give children screen time too. But it's about the type of screen time and the whole kind of consumption versus creation. So, you know, if your children are playing lots of video games, can they design a video game? If they're watching a lot of YouTube, could they use iMovie to make some of their own movies? You know, coding is actually one of the most creative activities that you can do. So we talk about creativity. It feels like a very off-screen thing to talk about, but actually doing it on a screen is an excellent and very 21st century way to be practicing that skill. So yeah, there probably is a little bit of resistance to that. I think I, as all entrepreneurs, will be having this problem. Pricing is a really big thing. And for my workshops that are very small sizes, heavily resourced with sort of robotics equipment or iPads or computers, led by a qualified teacher, they're long days. When you compare that to going to a kids' activity camp in a school holiday, paying £10-15 a day, we just can't compete with that. And we don't want to compete with that. But the problem is, you are competing with that, because if yeah. the parents are looking at where do they send their child because they have to go to work, they have to see the value of what we're doing and be willing to pay a premium to do it. So I guess that is our biggest sticking point with parents rather than the content, I think.
Absolutely. That's really interesting. And yeah, I think it's one of those classic challenges for entrepreneurs is, A, pricing is often difficult anyway, but B, as you say, like there's always going to be an option that's cheaper, you know, or free or whatever. And so it's about, you know, helping educate your ideal customer on the benefits and the value. Okay, great. So one thing that you mentioned earlier is that perhaps your passion for this and why you feel like this has come up as a gap has been sort of came from what you experienced in San Francisco, particularly in terms of the kind of workplace and the culture that you saw there and some of the ways in which you kind of saw the world changing. So tell us a little bit about what you experienced and why it had this profound impact.
Yeah, I think like all parents and parentpreneurs, we're all concerned about the future of our children. We always hear about there being less of certain jobs and people panicking about that. But we know that there's more of other kinds of jobs like social media managers and vloggers and lots of things that didn't exist in the past. And I think going to San Francisco makes that even clearer, more obvious, if you like. It is a little bit like stepping into the future. You see how jobs are changing with the advent of new technology, and the new jobs that are coming about and the jobs that exist and how they are changing. And workers need to be able to keep up with that change. So my specific job in San Francisco focused on preparing children for the real world and 21st century skills. I was able to visit really cutting edge schools. I spoke to experts in education and neurology from Stanford, from Berkeley, and I was able to observe companies who were at the forefront of technology. And then I came back to the UK, and I really saw how far we have to go in equipping today's children for the working world of the future. And then I started thinking about my own children and what I wanted for them. And I think a good example is the Maker movement, which is really big in California and other parts of the United States. It really isn't very well known here. I've talked about it to people who have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. It's really about tinkering and DIY and just making stuff. And it's all about that creative problem solving. So I really wanted that kind of thing for my children, and I just couldn't really find anything. So I think taking the sort of my specific job in San Francisco, the culture that I'd observed in San Francisco of everybody having a startup, I thought, well, you know, I can make something like that myself. I don't need to wait around for somebody else to start something. It's what I was saying about like seeing a problem and creating a solution for it. And so that's kind of what fed in to me starting only last year, Inventors and Makers.
Fantastic. And running a business and being a parent and so on can be a tricky task, as often covered on this podcast. You know, it has huge demands on your time. Both do, and often, you know, one of the perhaps criticisms of some of the kind of tech heavy places like San Francisco is that often they don't seem to kind of appreciate that and so on. What's been your experience of that, both in San Francisco but also in your own business? How's that balance best achieved? What's been working for you?
Well, I mean, yeah, being a parent puts huge limits on your time. I'm the primary carer of our children. My husband has a very busy job and there's a lot to do. But also my children are the motivation, inspiration for my business. So that really brings a very different element to it. I don't know whether it would be necessarily a fair criticism that tech companies don't have regard to family. Like, having been a city lawyer in London and being married to somebody who works for a big tech firm, I'm pretty sure that the tech firm have done more to support him as a parent than a lot of my friends going back to being lawyers. I think that there's a bit of a war of attrition in California of who can have the give the best benefit. So, I mean, he got 4 months paternity leave, which is unheard of in America for a father to get that. Having said that, I actually, shock horror, went back to work after 11 weeks after my first child when we were living in California. Yes, my husband was then on paternity leave. Yes, I worked 5 minutes from my house. Yes, he could bring her down at lunchtime, but I absolutely loved that. I loved my job and I loved my colleagues so much that I kind of skipped back to work that day. I was so excited about going in. So, you know, it was such a lovely culture and a small startup. I could work from home if I needed to. I could leave early and work later. That it actually worked really well working for that startup and having a baby. We weren't actually, full disclosure, we weren't there very long after I'd had her and before we moved back to the UK. But the time that we were there, it was actually pretty good. I think actually the hardest thing with having children is running your own business, because all the responsibility falls on you. Every moment that you're not working is a moment that your business could be moving forward and isn't. And to have that guilt, because you really want to enjoy the time that you have with your children, and to be constantly feeling that there's something you can do for your business, competing with there's something I could be doing with my children, that I think is the really hard thing, of it being your own passion and your own business.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I think we've seen a few times on episodes before, where that weird sort of dual guilt, where you're guilty when you're not working because you feel like this project that could yield fruit in the future, but at the moment just costs money, isn't moving forward. But then, yeah. Of course, as soon as you start on the working, you then feel the guilt that you're not spending time with family and so on.
You can't win.
Yeah, you really can't. And I think the only way I've seen it work is kind of just time blocking and deciding in advance and saying, well, this is what I think is acceptable hours and focus in each. As you've kind of grown the business, how have you kind of changed your approach or that of your team to kind of make that work?
Well, one kind of very minor but interesting thing that I've changed recently, which is more to do with differing childcare arrangements, but I always traditionally didn't work on a Friday. But it meant that I found Fridays quite stressful because anything that I wasn't doing, I couldn't then do till the Monday, because over the weekend there was things going on, it was family time or whatever. And I've recently moved to having a Wednesday off, which a lot of my friends had done from their jobs previously. And I always thought, oh, it's so silly because then you can't have a long weekend. But actually, I'm able to switch off much better when I have that day midweek, because if something comes in or something comes up, I think, well, it doesn't matter because I can handle it tomorrow morning. And I'm much more able to be present in the time with my children by having that midweek one day slot than having it at the one end of a week, I think.
Great. So looking particularly then at the team culture and how that works, because, you know, as you say, I mean, that you've just given a brilliant example of how personally you can create better balance. But back when you were in San Francisco, what was the team culture like there, and how particularly did it work for those that with family commitments?
Yeah, well, you might need to stop me on this because I could probably talk forever about the culture in my team in San Francisco. So I think you said in the introduction at the beginning that I do say that it is the best workplace, the best work environment that I have ever had and probably ever will have. And I think in terms of what that looked like, there were two real aspects to it. First of all, it was like there was a real culture of fun amongst the employees. We were mostly young. There were, at that time, I didn't have children when I started. And actually it was only the CEO who did have children. So it was a very young team. But I was the third person to come on as a member of staff. But we grew to, before I left 3 years later, there were 16 of us and a team of authors around the US. So being part of that very early group, I was able to sort of watch how that changed and how it grew. We had all sorts of social routines. Like, we had communal lunches. We made a really big deal of people's birthdays. We had annual summer barbecues and holiday parties, which we'd call Christmas parties. All those things that, you know, every workplace you have someone you go for lunch with pretty much, or you do something with someone's birthdays. But because it was a small team, we would all have lunch together. We would all celebrate someone's birthday. So it was very, very inclusive. We knew each other really well. We laughed a lot. We had this, at the time it was a Google Doc, but one of my ex-colleagues has now had it printed for everybody into a hard copy book, this kind of overheard app document, that every time someone said something a bit daft or funny, it got written into this document and who'd said it. And it just really encouraged everyone to laugh at each other and with each other and have shared jokes. My husband, and I know one of the girlfriends of someone else I work with, said it always felt a bit like a cult, in a positive way. But it was, we were really doing something together as a team. A sort of silly example was, I, for some reason, had always wanted to learn the Thriller dance. And I must have mentioned it one day. And one of my colleagues was an ex-ballerina, obviously not hugely relevant to dancing Thriller, but, you know, she could pick up a dance routine and teach it. And a few of us said, oh, that'd be kind of fun. And before we knew it, 2/3, 3/4 of the office were getting up every day for either an afternoon break or at lunchtime and learning the Thriller dance that we ended up performing just for ourselves. Like, it wasn't a big deal, but it was something that, it was just part of the office. We'd do it with our CEO in the room with us. He didn't mind that we were all taking time out to do that because it was really growing the culture of the team. So there was there was that kind of like culture of fun aspect of it, but there was also a really inclusive and strong work culture. And I think two kind of aspects that stood out of that. One was that there was a real sense of appreciation and gratitude. Something that we did in a monthly all hands was we had these like above and beyond, they weren't really awards, it was just a card. Mm-hmm. And just before the all hands, we say, oh, don't forget your above and beyonds. And everybody would write a thank you to somebody in the team who they thought that month had gone above and beyond their role. So it wasn't like just doing your job, it was going above and beyond it, obviously. And then you'd write in the card like all the thank you. And then when you stood up at the end of the all hands, you'd say, oh, giving above and beyond, and summarize it. And it was so lovely. It was such a small thing. But, you know, startups, they often can't afford to reward people with financial bonuses or, you know, freebies and stuff. But people don't always need that. They just need to feel like that what they're doing is appreciated. And having that call out and that recognition every month was so important. And then the other aspect that I was mentioning was the CEO really encouraged a culture of revision and reflection. I mean, those words just say everything about working there to me. So we dedicated time to thinking about the mistakes that we'd made, and it was okay to make mistakes, but we all then would sit down and say about everything we did, every product launch, every meeting, every sale, whatever it was, we'd sit down and all type into a Google Doc what went well, what we could have done better, next steps or whatever. And the CEO would sit there and do that with us, and he would say the things that he could have done better and the things that he thinks we did well. And so really it made, you're a startup, right? Like, you're always going to make mistakes. And if you can talk about those mistakes and learn from them, you really feel like you're failing together and learning together. And I think if you all feel that like that is together, then you all feel bought in. You feel bought into the mission of the company. You feel bought into your role, and you feel very bonded, I think. And I, all in all, it was just like a very close team, bonded through the culture and through the work practices.
Love it. Yeah, some brilliant examples there and ideas. I've been tapping down a few ideas for me to consider with my team as well, because I think that, as you say, like things like the above and beyonds, it's so, those sorts of ideas are so simple and cheap. Yeah. To put in, and yet they can have fundamental impacts on the people and the team. So I really, really like that. In the team that you had there, was everyone office based and face to face? Did anyone work remotely? How did it work for people in the office?
Yeah, so all of us that were, well, there were a couple of sales team and advisors and stuff that weren't in the office. And we had contractors of teachers and authors around the country. But in terms of like the full-time members of staff, we were all there. I mean, when there were just three of us, we were in a co-working space, obviously, where everybody starts out, moving from table to table as with the politics of co-working spaces. And then we upgraded to a room in a co-working space, and we grew quite rapidly within that room. And at one point, I think the room was meant for, say, five people. There were 10 of us in there. It was ridiculous. I mean, you tried not to be the last to work because you got the worst seat, or you had to sit on the sofa in the corner because there was no other space in the room. So that, we were all there. We then finally moved to our own bigger office, but we were all in one space. We had three big desks that we were broadly arranged by team. And there were like 4 to 6 people on each desk, including the CEO was at a desk with the other people that he worked with. And so, yeah, we were all together. Sometimes people work from home, but I don't think that we would have had the culture that we had if people hadn't been there. So when I actually left, I came back to the UK and I carried on working with them for a little while, remotely, just like a couple of days a week. And it was so much harder. We had somebody that had worked with us remotely for a while before, and I don't think any of us had appreciated, and they probably still didn't appreciate, it was only me being that person, how very difficult it is to come into a meeting when everybody else is sitting in the same place and has been all day and will be after the meeting, and you're just dialing in for that half an hour. So I really see the benefit of everybody being together. Having said that, I'm now running a business that won't have an office like that. The staff that I'm going to take on will be to run workshops and to run classes, and everyone will be based in different places. So something that I need to think about is, well, how do I replicate a lot of those things that I really want to do, that I really think are important, when we aren't together every day? We aren't getting to know each other just by spending time together. Like, how do we create opportunities for the same relationships with colleagues?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's a really important challenge to address, because I think I've definitely seen organisations that and small businesses that haven't solved that early on, frankly, including my software business in the early days, because we always knew we wanted to build a remotely distributed team. You know, we did not do a good job initially of making sure that we were creating that culture and making people still feel that same togetherness and appreciation, yeah, and so on, when we were, whilst working remotely. And I think, as you say, the hybrid approach is a really difficult one to carry to pull off, because for my team now, you know, we now set up the various ways of working that mean that actually we've got a very close-knit team, despite the fact that we're spread out over, I think, 5 or 6 countries, and no one works in the same office, and basically we only all meet up once per year in person, and the rest of the time it's all done online. And yet I've never felt more connected to the team, yeah, than, yeah, than this one versus anywhere else I've worked. But I think, as you say, it's like you need to change your working practices. You know, it's like if you're going to have a meeting where some people are joining in remotely, you kind of can't have everyone else in the room and then everyone else kind of dials in. You almost need everyone to be dialing, yeah, in, and sat, yeah, at a desk looking at a webcam rather than, yeah, you know, the meeting room with the webcam in the corner. And there's various stuff like that. It is tough.
It's almost like the relationships need to be equal between each party, like the strength of bonds between each individual person. Because as soon as you have 2/3 or whatever of the team very close, those other people are going to feel much looser bonds to them. Whereas for you, if everybody is remote, you kind of have the same strength of bonds between everybody, and perhaps that bonds you tighter together.
Yeah, definitely. I think we just did a couple of big recruitment rounds. Frequent listeners to the podcast know that for me, for my business, that means that we have maybe a couple of thousand applicants plus per role. Right. So it's, you know, we do a lot of sifting and we get to talk to a lot of people to make sure that we've got the right people in. But one of the interesting things is that because we hire remotely, obviously we get a lot of people that are looking for remote roles. And that is one of the challenges, is that many of them have been working at organizations where it's not fully remote and it's not the same, you know, and it doesn't feel right. So I think you're absolutely right. Sort of building that is going to be an important part. I mean, one thing to a related challenge is, of course, the development of the team and the building of their skill set and so on. How was that done in your previous workplace? You know, what really worked there to keep that development in the team, particularly when it's a busy team, you know, high and fast growth, whilst simultaneously balancing that with learning thriller dance and so on.
Well, it was very busy time dancing.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Before I knew, when I knew I was going to come on and speak to you, I messaged a lot of my ex-colleagues and said, what was it that you think was really good? And was it this great culture that I remember? And they all agreed that it was. And sort of we talked, I said, you know, what's your take on it? Because I wanted to know what they thought too. And one person, I said, well, I better not say that. But he said, I think it was that none of us knew what we were doing. I was like, I don't think that's a great piece of advice for an entrepreneur to take on people that don't know what they're doing. But actually, what he was saying was, you know, none of us knew what we were doing because it was a startup. It was something new and we were all learning all the time. I mean, they were very, very smart people, lots of very experienced people. But within the particular thing we were doing, as is the case for all startups, we were all doing things for the first time. So everybody was developing. And so we didn't have particular, like, it wasn't like a big corporate, we didn't have training sessions or anything, but the job was our training. We were all becoming the best at the thing we were doing, better than anybody else was at it, because we were the only person learning to do each of our roles. And I think the leadership from the top, when I look back, was really pivotal in that. We were all really given a freedom and an autonomy. That the mission came from our CEO, but there was a real feeling that the next idea could actually come from anyone in the team. Anyone could chip in. And that really brought people into the company and into their role. And as I mentioned, allowing that culture of mistakes being okay, failing together, failure pulling you together. And the biggest thing of all that really developed all of us was having a passion for the cause. So our CEO was extremely passionate about our mission. And that filtered down to everybody. Okay, yes, it was in education. It was about children, and maybe something that for a lot of people is easier to become passionate about. But we all really cared about the company. We all really cared about our roles, and we cared about supporting each other and learning and doing the best that we could. And so I think it was kind of a self-development and a development as a team, if that makes sense.
Definitely, definitely. And it's interesting because it almost feels full circle, because of course, the same applies to the way in which you run your workshops, right? You know, getting the kids, rather than saying, right, you're going to learn problem solving or design or whatever. Instead, it's getting them excited around a cause and something that they're passionate about, which might be, you know, creating a game and doing something cool like that, but actually working together in teams to deliver it. So it seems like workplace teams or children, the top tip is perhaps to start with a really big sort of mission and purpose of what you're looking to do, and then get the team around it to do it. But that's really, yeah, really nice.
I think that the passion as well, what was interesting was that I think a lot of businesses fail because they fall in love with a solution that they've come up with. And what we were always really in love with in the startup in San Francisco was the problem. So we were passionate about the problem. And so when we needed to pivot, which of course we did, and most startups do, our overall mission and the thing we were passionate about didn't change, because the essence of entrepreneurship is being able to, like, throw out a product that isn't working, but keep that central purpose. So as long as everybody is bought in to the problem, then it doesn't matter what you're doing, because you're still solving it. And I think that kept everybody on track, even when something that you'd worked really hard on was kind of thrown out and something else came in. It wasn't such a sort of devastating moment to lose something.
Nice. No, I completely understand. Fantastic. Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today, Laura, but it's been amazing talking to you and hearing about the journey that you've gone through and what you learned in San Francisco, and how you're taking that into your business, Inventors and Makers. One thing to ask is, I'll obviously include a link to Inventors and Makers in the show notes, but any other ways in which people can get in contact with you, or other resources that you think that people should check out?
Well, obviously social, Instagram and Facebook, but I put out blogs from time to time about, you know, how parents can encourage creativity at home or encourage problem solving at home. And as you mentioned, you know, we're a very new company at the moment, but I'm hoping to grow this. So if anyone's interested in kind of setting something like this up where they are or whatever, then be always good to chat. It's always good to meet new people.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, I'll include those links, but thank you again. It's been awesome, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Oh, thanks for chatting. Bye.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.